Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we also have Dr. Kim Hayes with us, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, September the 18th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. We have an absolutely awesomely beautiful, clear day in St. Louis, Missouri. It's probably about 78 degrees and sunshine and absolutely beautiful. And we're blessed to just be experiencing life, and we are doubly blessed by the fact that each of you who chooses to join us chooses to do that and that you're with us today. So we appreciate your presence on the show. And you're holding the space for this work. You know, one of the things that we invite everyone to do, and I haven't talked about this in a while, is that at 5 minutes to the showtime, the hour, wherever you're located, we have people who have the alarm set on their phones so that 5 minutes to showtime, wherever you are in the world, your alarm goes off. And we invite people to take that 5 minutes and just focus on an extra level of focus on bringing in the active presence of love to support and create the space for this process of healing ourselves, each other, and the planet. And really getting a shift and a change. You know, people talk about how, well, everything in my life is handled, but things aren't going so well. And to recognize that if things aren't going so well, then things in your life aren't handled. There are things to be dealt with, and the things to be dealt with are things that are inside of you, although your mind will always convince you and trick you into believing that it's outside of you. You know, one of the phrases I like to refer to quite often is that of Vladimir Lenin. He gave us a really powerful key when he said that the way to destroy a culture is to change the meaning of its words. And when we change the meaning of words, we literally make communication around whatever those words are impossible. And some of the key words that have been changed have just created such destructive effects in the world. One of the most important ones, of course, is the focus of this work, and that is forgiveness. You'll notice that we live in a culture that's taught us that you can be forgiven, and people can forgive you, and you can forgive others. And all of that is untrue. You've never been forgiven. You never will be. You've never forgiven anyone. You never will. And no one's ever going to forgive you because you can't. It doesn't work that way. We've had the definition of that word changed. And so we have people running around saying, well, I'm forgiven, so it doesn't matter what I do. And they fall, and they get into their poor behaviors, and they have pain, and they have turmoil. But they proclaim as they get up, well, but I've been forgiven. And then tomorrow they start the routine all over again. Excuse me. Forgiveness means an end to your pain and your turmoil and your trauma. Forgiveness means an end to your upset and your disturbance. So if you engage in forgiveness, you will remove the hostility, the fear, the pain, the drama, the trauma that the world says is normal and wants you to live in. So what has happened is that we've had a Greek idea of pardoning substituted for forgiveness. And when they substituted pardoning for forgiveness, all of a sudden, people thought, well, now that I've let you off the hook, now that I've let somebody else off the hook, now that somebody let me off the hook, or even God has let me off the hook, God has forgiven me, then everything's cool, and their lives go on with their drama, their trauma, and their turmoil. Excuse me. When forgiveness happens, your life does not move forward in drama, trauma, and turmoil. That doesn't mean that you won't have things to continue to deal with, but as you address an issue and go to the core of it, once you've reached the core, then you will be finished with that issue in your life. That's when you'll know that forgiveness has occurred. And forgiveness is an inside job. It's not something that comes from the outside. Would someone pardon you? Could the Creator pardon you for the insanities you've done? Absolutely. But that isn't changing the content of one's own mind. And the reason why people are guided back into the same crazy behaviors over and over again is because they haven't experienced forgiveness. And forgiveness is something that you engage in inside of yourself and remove that which causes you to fall, that which causes you to be in turmoil, in trauma, in pain, in sadness, in grief. So forgiveness is about removing those energies. It's not about being let off the hook or letting somebody else off the hook because those energies are there. So people who run around saying, well, I've been forgiven and continue with the same behaviors, don't have a clue what forgiveness is. They think it's something that's done from outside of them. They think it's something somebody else gives them. And that's a lie of our culture. Change the meaning of the words, you can destroy a culture. So it's time to stop forgiving people. Never, ever forgive anyone ever again for anything. And many people say, oh, that's right, yes, I have to forgive myself. No, please, never, ever even contemplate forgiving yourself again for anything that you do. If you choose to pardon someone, if you choose to pardon yourself because you've done something that's inappropriate, great. Engage in pardoning yourself or another. Let yourself off the hook, let them off the hook, wonderful thing to do. Then engage in the forgiveness work. That is, go inside yourself and do your part in removing what's at the root of the aberrant behavior, the aberrant feeling. So forgiveness is about removal of what never belonged, not being let off the hook because you keep doing things out of that which never belonged. So when we correct the language, we're not looking for instance, the Creator to forgive us. The Creator hasn't judged us. The Creator is love. That's just the way it is. We are continuously embraced in love 24/7, 365. That's what human life is about. And when we take something into our human form or we experience something from our generations that never belonged in us, then we get locked into the patterns of those hostilities, fears, griefs, rages, pains, dramas, traumas, whatever. You apply forgiveness, and hear me if you would really clearly. You apply forgiveness by removing what does not belong inside of you. You do not apply forgiveness by letting somebody else off the hook for what's inside of you. And you can hear a little voice in the background. That's Addie, who's now doing full sentences and full stories and just rocking along. She's now just a little better than 2.5. And what a blessing. We've gotten to spend many, many hours with Addie while we've been here. You want to say hello, sweetie? Say hello. Say hello. Okay, she's going to play shy now. But anyway, so pardon if you will, call it what it is. It's not forgiveness to let someone else off the hook, not forgiveness to let yourself off the hook. Pardon as you choose. And then engage in the removal, forgive, remove what drove the behavior in the first place. And when you do that, you'll be free of it. That's how you'll know forgiveness is actually taking place. Now, there was a question that was asked of Yeshua, the original teacher of this internal forgiveness process. They asked him, well, how many times do we need to forgive? Like, how many of these worksheets do we have to do anyways? And the question was asked, is 7 enough? And his answer in Aramaic was no. He said 77 times 70. You may revisit, if you have a deep genetic history with a particular issue, you may revisit that particular issue many, 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 many times before you get to the level of strength and vitality where you can totally toss that one out of your life. So you will tend to come back around to those issues again and again, but you'll come around to them at different levels. And as you move through those different levels, life just changes so fabulously, dramatically. You don't fall into the same old hole over and over again. You don't do the same behaviors once those behaviors have been forgiven in you, that is, removed from you. And so that's our focal point. We want to get that across, that to end this conversation about forgiving ourselves and forgiving others and recognize that forgiveness is the removal of what's creating the pain, the turmoil, the trauma, the drama. When you remove those things, you can stand in front of a behavior that yesterday you said that behavior, oh, that behavior was so disturbing to me. And it wasn't the behavior that was disturbing, it was the unforgiven energy in yourself that was disturbing. Once you have forgiven that energy, then you can stand in front of that behavior. Doesn't mean you like it. You know, it was maybe some kind of a crazy behavior. Doesn't mean you like it. Doesn't mean you approve of it. Doesn't mean you accept it. It does mean that you've healed your turmoil and trauma around it, and now you stand as a healing space for that particular behavior. You are the active presence of love. You can maintain that state of love in you in the presence of that behavior, and now because you are the active presence of love, you begin the healing of whatever that behavior is in the people around you. And what we're looking to do is to create a generation of mentors, a generation of elders, not in the sense of old, but elders in terms of understanding and bringing forgiveness forward into the world, that we can each stand as the space of love for each other, and it is the active presence of love that dissolves, removes, or forgives those things which we're willing to expose. Now, there's a trick to exposing them that the world does not understand. And the trick is that the root of what needs to be dealt with for the average person, they have dissociated from. They've hidden it from themselves. And the way we hide from ourselves whatever it is we don't want to deal with is we talk about someone else as cause. So we say, she made me mad. He hurt me. That really upset me. Oh, that situation over there, that really created a lot of disturbance for me. A conversation that goes like that, that something outside of you is causing something to happen inside of you, is called denial. Our definition of denial. When I speak or think a thought that something outside of me is the cause of what's going on inside of me, then I'm living in denial. And in denial, I dissociate from the very thing I need to forgive. There's only one place on planet Earth, one teacher on planet Earth that I know of that came forward with a succinct, applicable, consistent, persistent technology for accessing and removing the dissociated parts of the mind. His name was Yeshua. He came forward with that teaching in the first century in his original native Aramaic language. The Greeks smashed it to pieces. He came forward again just a couple of decades ago in a thing called A Course in Miracles. And in that text, his definition of forgiveness is precisely the same as it was in the original Aramaic. You go inside yourself and you remove the root of your trauma. It's called forgiveness. There is a technology to it. You have to know how to bypass your own dissociated states. And because we all come from a thousand generation of people who've lived in denial, that's not an easy thing to do, because we've been trained so deeply by our world to talk about everybody and everything else. Oh, yes, it was my child that upset me. Yes, it was my spouse that caused my pain. Excuse me, before that child came into the world, you knew that quality of pain. Your child no more caused that in you than fly in the air. I was speaking to a woman. I was just in the store, and there was a woman behind me with her father and about a two-and-a-half-year-old child, and rather curtly speaking to her father and kind of tossing her two-and-a-half-year-old little boy into the grocery cart. As she tossed him in, she said, "Dad, if I ever think about having more babies, just remind me that it's stupid, that it's just a, and she just went on about how it was all the baby's fault that she was in such stress and pain. And I kind of, I had Adeline with me, and so I just pointed to Adeline and said, they're such a blessing. Oh, no, not this one. No, this is just, it's like, have you ever thought, and she talked about how, he's always in disturbance and always in upset and complaining. And I just kind of looked at her and as gently as I could said, has it ever occurred to me that maybe he's not the one that's always in upset, that maybe you are, and maybe you're the one who's complaining, and that maybe he's just your mirror?" She just got pretty silent and looked at me. She was very gentle in receiving what I had to say. Her father just kind of grinned, gave an audible laugh, and it was, it was clear to me that her father had been thinking kind of the same thing. So hopefully this young lady will hear that her son is a mirror and stop the abuse here and now, because the way she handled the child, the way she spoke to the child, the message that the child was sent was one of how much of a disturbance you are in my world, how much of a mistake you are, and you deserve to be abused for what you're doing to me. Sadly, this little 2.5-year-old boy, who of course is tiny compared to mom and is very abusable, when he gets to be 6'3", 280 pounds, chances are those who represent his mother, which are going to be the women he's in relationship with, are going to become the subject of the same abuse his mother did to him. Unless somebody steps in and he can learn to forgive those things, then he's going to become the big bad abuser. Look what he does to women. He beats women. Well, this woman didn't hit the little boy, but the way she threw him in the cart and the way she talked to him, I'm sure if there weren't witnesses around, there would have been a fist or a slap or something that went along with it. And we so often don't realize when we live in denial. This woman, her state was one of total denial. The reason for her upset was her 2.5 or 3-year-old son. And when a 2.5 or 3-year-old is given that message consistently and persistently, they grow up knowing how worthless they are. They grow up with a tremendous amount of pain, and hurting people hurt people. And so I'm sure this woman, being in great pain, was passing her pain on to her offspring. And we'll hope that maybe we were able to inject another thought that might bring her to a new space. And that's what we're working to create this group of elders for around the globe. People who really, truly understand forgiveness, can stand in a space of love, stand in a space of compassion, and open the energy window for people to see what it is they're doing to themselves and each other, and to change the dynamic. So that's what we're here to do. And we are so blessed to have so many people who choose to play, who choose to participate and take this work on deeper and deeper levels to more and more people. And one of those people, and we are so blessed to have you with us, Dr. Kim, because you support us in so many ways. We appreciate your financial support, which you do on an ongoing basis. It really does help us to get out and around and move further and further afield. We're looking forward to getting to come up and be with you in Woodstock, starting on Sunday. And then all the times when we get in a bind and can't get to the show, when you handle the switchboard, you take over the show on a minute's notice, we appreciate the blessing that you are in our lives and the number of people that you inspire to become part of that group of elders that changes the world. So So we're working to create a team that changed the world, and we appreciate everybody who chooses to be part of it. And Dr. Tim, how do you be today? Anything to share with us?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. I was on at the beginning of the show yesterday and had a delivery happen, so I had to receive the new office furniture for the expanded office. And I listened to almost all of the show later in the day, so I got to hear that you were getting updates from people about their support groups on Tuesday. And we had a support group on Tuesday up in Woodstock. And because you're going to be here Sunday through Saturday doing various titles, and since we were in the cycle of things, we had just finished going through all of your lectures that we have on DVD, we were scheduled to start anew. But since you're going to do that on Sunday when you come here, I thought, well, let's have Dale Allen Hoffman talk about the Beatitudes. So we listened to the first hour of Dale's two and a half hour CD presentation on the Beatitudes. And that was quite nice, and there were a lot of interesting comments and discussion that happened from that. And then we had a few new people in the group, and nobody was urgently needed to present a worksheet. So I did one. I did another worksheet on the kind of a spin-off of one of the many spin-offs I had from a worksheet I shared a couple weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago now, in the group. I mean, on the radio. And so I did a worksheet on the coach. On the coach that was reprimanding me for getting beat up, but he was reprimanding me for getting into a fight and threatened to throw me out of school. And so I had my goal for him to listen to me, to understand, things like that. And I canceled that goal and reminded myself how it's really me creating my perception, and I'm choosing the wrong 9 bits of information, and here I am 46 years later still thinking about what that person did or said and generating anger and fear in me. And so I canceled the goal and went inside and asked to be shown the hidden part of my mind, and my rage towards him melted, and I got to see him as probably a young father working to save his job at this Catholic high school where he was an assistant coach and a track coach. And I got to see a new level of insight into how prevalent the football hazing was and how much he probably would have lost his job if he had stood up to football hazing back then. And he was doing the only thing he could do, from his perspective, to save his job and move on with his life. And I felt compassion for him, and the rage was gone. And as I talked about it and processed it with the group afterwards, I felt deep sadness. And the thoughts that came up were about the kinds of things we talked about a few weeks ago on the show. My sadness that this really wasn't a safe world, this wasn't a safe place, this wasn't a fair place, and that the love and kindness that I tried to show people all day, every day, as a 14-year-old, weren't really going to mesh too well with the athletic world and the competition and the macho style that carried the day back then. So I had some sadness and some tears, and I processed through that and made a note to do some worksheets on that sadness, because that was at about maybe a 6 out of 10 at that point. But the rage had gone from a 9 out of 10 down to a 0. So it was a successful worksheet, and then we got to discuss in the group for several other people worksheets that they had done, how it was triggering to listen to my worksheet and how they were working on other issues. And so it was very productive once again, just a wonderful group. and a very loving and supportive group of people up there in Woodstock. So that's my
offer. Powerful. Go ahead, excuse me.
It leads me into the discussion about perception and how active my process of perception is, and that I create my perception internally. It's not, my eyes aren't showing me accurately what's happening, especially when I'm triggered to anger or fear or sadness. And so that's what it led me into realizing even more deeply on Tuesday night. And
well, as you share that, you kind of trigger me back to the story that I just told about being in the store just a few minutes ago. And, you know, what will the perceptual output of this young man's mind be if at 2.5 to 3, he's literally being rather roughly, you know, kind of tossed into a metal shopping cart and being told, you know, how much of an interference he is. And as his mother complains and whines, and, you know, I say, gee, these kids are such a blessing. She's like, oh, you know, it's just nothing but whining and complaining. It'll be interesting to see what that looks like in his life. If we could be a fly on the wall, you know, 30 years from now, how is the output of his mind going to be working, and especially in relationship to women? It's going to be pretty interesting, pretty exciting. So it is a process of unfolding and opening the space for this healing to occur, and there's just so much suffering and pain in the world to be addressed. And fortunately, Yeshua gave us a key, and he said that a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, and we don't have to, bring every, you know, abused child into the forgiveness process, but we get enough people who are willing to voluntarily enter into the forgiveness process, and things are going to change, things are going to shift. And so that's it's powerful to recognize the possibilities.
Agreed. And it's I had somebody else in this morning who was just starting to use the tools and feeling the magnitude and starting to feel overwhelmed. And all I can offer is that you're not going to be done in a week or two. However, if you get started today, a week or two from now, you'll probably feel a positive difference. And that at each level, you know, each year that I do this, each set of worksheets that I work through, each new situation in my life that comes up where I get triggered, I can clearly see that I'm handling things so much more effectively, so much more quickly, so much more lovingly than I was even 2 or 3 years ago, much less 10 or 15 years ago. So
I hear you loud and clear, and that's what, you know, to me, that's what we call an elder, someone who's willing to do that work and to go through, you know, become the one who opens the gate early so that others can pass through it. And I wonder, Dr. Tim, if you might be able to take the show for a few minutes. I'm in the car with Addie. We're parked in the shade doing this show. And I don't know if you could hear that little voice in the background a moment ago saying,
Papa, I need to pee.
So,
well, we couldn't could. Hear that, but it's good to know that. And I'll be happy to ask Jeannie if there are any hands up or any discussion in the chat room we should be aware of.
Well, I'm going to run her inside and we're trying to put. Okay, I'm going to leave it with you guys. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Okay, so yes, we do have a hand up right now, and Michelle has a question in the chat room, but, well, our hand up just disappeared. So whoever it was, if you're still on the switchboard, press 1, and you're first in line. And Michelle didn't come back. I'm not sure that this is her total question. when Michael was talking about the story of the lady and the baby and everything, I believe he mentioned that she called him Dad. But Michelle said, did Michael just assume that that was her father? And possibly that was her power person, and maybe that's why if he was Grandpa, he didn't say anything to check her behavior because he accepted it as their family normal, whether it was himself or his wife, which would have been her mother or whatever. So possibly the power person dynamic came into play there as well. But
so,
since Michael's not on here, he can't answer that
that. Was that a question from Michelle?
Yeah, could it have been a power person behavior, why the granddad didn't check the lady's behavior when she put the baby in the cart so roughly and said, you know, remind me never to have another one or whatever. Wonder if that was a power person dynamic that she picked up from him, why the grandfather didn't step in and say, you know, hey, change your behavior here or something.
Well,
could
it
have
sense.
Been?
If he's in the same family, it makes sense because in different families, all kinds of behaviors that might be labeled abusive outside that family are labeled as normal inside the family. So it could be.
Yeah, exactly. So 646-200-4169 is their calling number. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. Like I said, somebody had their hand up just a moment ago, but then they disappeared. It was a 417 number, but I have 3 417 numbers on the switchboard right now, so I'm not sure which one of you it was.
Well, we'd be happy to entertain questions. We'd be happy to have somebody call with a question about the worksheet process or anything Michael mentioned in the intro, because it's, you know, I was talking to somebody this morning, as I mentioned, who's relatively new to the work, and I suggested to him that what he sees with his eyes is not what's actually out in front of him. And he said, you're either talking crazy or it's going to take me a long time to understand what you're saying. And that really does sound crazy to a lot of people. However, if you realize there's actually a page on a CIA website and the title of a chapter that the page is dedicated to, a chapter from a book, and it says, why don't we see what is there to be seen? You understand, our government, our researchers, people who study perception, people who study how the mind works and the eyes work, they all understand this. They don't exactly apply it in their lives as effectively as they could or as effectively as Yeshua was teaching us to. I don't think anybody does it completely well, but it might sound like crazy talk to somebody who's never studied the science of it, because we're raised in a culture that completely ignores the science of it and uses projection and externalization and blame and guilt and shame routinely to explain away responsibility, personal responsibility for the realities we're creating. So, I just wanted to say that yesterday when Michael was talking about resonance, it was either yesterday or the day before in his intro, I think he did a beautiful job, perhaps one of the best I've heard him do, explaining how it's not about blame, it's not about guilt and shame, it's about responsibility. And the difference between responsibility and guilt and blame is that if I can see clearly what my role is in creating my perception and in creating the energies which then radiate out from me and actively bring other energies toward me from other people who have their own energy fields, if I can see that clearly, then responsibility is a tool I can pick up which allows me the possibility to respond differently in the future. So responsibility means I have the ability to respond differently to a similar situation in the future than I had in the current moment or in the past. It doesn't mean I should load up negative emotions that are attached to guilt and shame and blame. It simply means I can understand how my energy system works. I can understand that if I had the ability to perceive more accurately, I wouldn't see or feel a physical body. I would perceive an energy system. And I would be able to understand when the energy systems that are appropriate or the energies that are appropriate for this particular system are put in place, my experience is aliveness, joy, creativity, energy, flexibility, strength. And when energies that don't belong in the system are placed in the system, my experience is pain, discomfort, rigidity, crystallization, anger, fear, sadness. It's not about judgment. It's not about labeling. It's about experiencing in the moment and trying to open my awareness to a level of experience that goes beyond what I've had up until this time. If I'm going to be open to learning anything new, I must approach a situation with the conclusion in my mind that what I currently believe I know is either only partially true or completely false. And I said that to a person this morning, and they looked at me like I was absolutely crazy. And they said, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. And so I repeated one of my favorite lines, which is, if I go into a situation knowing that I know how I know what I know, I'm going to leave knowing what I knew. But I won't have any new information. I won't have any new understanding. I won't have any learning take place when I go in convinced that I'm right and I know what's going on. So in order to learn anything new, Guy Finley says, in order to learn anything from anyone or any situation, I have to put myself in a position that is subordinate to that person or situation that I would choose to learn from. He goes on to say that, as Michael talks about the laws of living and these powers, these energies, these forces that drive existence, I don't master any of those forces or principles or powers. But if I put myself in a position subordinate to them, I allow myself the possibility of learning from them about them. And when I do that sufficiently, that force, that principle makes available to me the power that lies behind it. But it's not about mastering a principle. It's not about mastering love. Mastery is not about control. It's about understanding and acceptance. So, enough on that. Let's see if there's a hand up, if we've triggered any thoughts in the chat room.
Okay. There is a hand up, 417-255. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Jim Farmer here.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, Dr. Jim. I have a question. And I've got 7 grandsons. And one of the things I admired about my mom as a grandmother and my dad as a grandfather was they rarely butted in. And so my question is, I understand the benefit of that man in line behind Michael, if he was the grandfather, being able to say something, power person notwithstanding. And I'd like your feedback on how you do that in a way that doesn't seem like you're sitting on your son or daughter's shoulder telling them how to parent. That's my question.
Okay, can I ask you to repeat what it was that you admired from your parents or
sure.
grandparents? Because I couldn't hear that.
Oh, sure. What I admired with my parents, with just one exception when my dad intervened, between a situation that happened with my daughter and I. But I appreciated the fact that they did not tell me how to parent. And I've done the same thing with my children. I have deliberately, on a few occasions, bitten my tongue when I thought I had a better idea about how the situation could be in front of my grandson. So that's my question. For me, it's a fine line between wanting to, and you know, the old concept, it takes a village to raise a child, which was Hillary Clinton's book. I believe there's truth in that, and I have a difficult time knowing when to say something, when not. I generally don't say anything at all. In fact, I don't say anything at all. I deliberately take a passive position and say a little short prayer and hope they get it. So I'd be interested in hearing your advice on the best way to approach that.
Well, I'd say the best way to approach that is probably going to be spoken to each person in the moment by that still small voice. And our job is to cultivate our ability to tune into, to ask for help from, and listen to that still small voice. That's a little too vague for most people, but I think it's ultimately the absolute best answer. If in each moment I can ask from a higher power or the Holy Spirit or God or light or love or the universe, how can I extend love through me in this moment, your love through me in this moment, then we'll probably act the best way we possibly can. But since most of us are operating at a whole different level of intellectual understanding and trying to figure things out, I think I would say something like this. As a knockoff, second best type of answer, the first thing to do is make sure that if I get triggered as a grandparent to anger or fear or sadness or hurt, I do my own work to dismantle that to the best of my ability before I act. And if I see my son or daughter interacting with my grandchild in a way that I think is less than loving, once I have diffused the negative energy around it, I would try to find a way to at least ask questions of my son or daughter that would allow them to reevaluate their approach and their style. And if they choose to do that, more is the better. And if they choose to maintain an interaction pattern with my grandchild that I think is unhealthy or unsavory, I have to judge the trade-off between, is this truly abusive and do I need to step in and stop this behavior, or do I need to report this to someone, or is this just less than ideal? It's not actually abusive at all, but it's certainly not what I would want for my grandchild, and how can I then get comfortable within myself to either approach my child again and ask questions that lead them to a different set of conclusions? And how can I support my grandchild to know they are loved, loving, and lovable forever, regardless of the upset that their parent might be displaying? So there are times when I find myself stepping in and dealing directly with children. You know, their parents bring them into my sessions, and I step in and I deal with the children, and I realize The dynamic at the parental and grandparent level is not going to change. I can't rescue this child from that because it isn't so bad that the state would take him away or her away or put somebody in jail. However, the pattern of interaction is clearly not optimal. And what I'm left with then is finding a way to connect with the child and get them to tune into their true nature as love and try to help them realize that they are loved, loving, and lovable forever, regardless of the activities of the people around them, and teach them the skills for doing the forgiveness work. And that's the best I have to offer in response to your question.
Well, Dr. Tim, I find that very helpful. I have four children, three of which have given me grandsons, and my oldest daughter is the best mom I've ever seen. And my youngest son is the best dad I've ever seen. He does fathering a whole lot better than I did. I guess he created from contrast. we're either creating towards something or away from something, and I suspect he created away from. But it's my one other daughter who, not abusive at all. Well, I shouldn't say that. Abusive, it's verbal abuse. It's just very, very controlling of her two sons. And now at the age of, my grandsons are 23 and 21, her sons. And they're in California and she's in Florida, and they rarely come back to visit, and they couldn't wait to. They both left home when they were 18. So, and she's not happy about that, but that's the fruit of her. And I'm sure she's repeating, you know, she's genetically gotten some of my stuff and my father's stuff, who did rage occasionally. But anyway, I appreciate that. What I have done in the past is just say a short prayer. And your first answer really resonates positively for me. It's just, you know, to make sure that I'm clear, that I'm coming from that, that I've got the love filter set, not coming from pure hostility, and then ask for guidance, which I do on many other occasions, and just to have the wisdom, the awareness, ask for that guidance then, so that the words that may come out of my mouth are going to be meaningful and going to be heard from a place of love and help create that space of love and heart. Anyway, I thank you very much. It's been very helpful.
You're very welcome. And one of the things you said triggered me to talk about parents who are controlling. And one of the strongest patterns I see and most difficult things to work with in that dynamic is that when parents are angry or controlling or, as you were saying, you know, verbally or emotionally abusive, my biggest challenge is to try to get the parents to see that they're operating from fear. And if I can help them tune into and dismantle their fear, then they can say almost exactly the same words to their children and have a completely different response, a completely different feeling inside themselves, a completely different feeling in the children, and a response from the child. And, you know, how do you dismantle fear? Well, all of the above, all of the tools that we have Michael teach at his seminars and that are available in his on his website. And my fear is always about an internal process inside of me, and it's built on corrupt data. And if I can learn to access the forgiveness process and dismantle those corrupt data or false conclusions that were triggered by the corrupt data, then I the need to be so controlling simply falls away. So thank you for the call.
There's no question about the fact that in the case of my daughter, it is fear-based. She definitely is. The fear is that she's not going to do the right thing as a parent. That's my belief. That if she doesn't do it the way she's doing it, the fear is that. And the boys have turned out, they're both marvelous young men. I'm biased because they're my grandsons, but they're both doing very, very well. And happy. Anyway,
One of the statements that I've come up with decades ago and been repeating for parents for years is that however much my children learn from me, whether they're going to learn 100 units of information from me or 100 million units of information from me, however much they learn from me, 80% of it is going to come by watching me. It's not going to come from the lectures I give them or the consequences I give them or the spankings I give them, et cetera. It's going to come by watching how I interact with them, how I interact with their siblings, how I interact with their other parent, how I interact with people at the grocery store. They are recording consciously and unconsciously all day long, watching what I say, what I do, how I say it and do it. And the next thing I say to them is, whether I like it or not, my parents, my children are going to grow up to be more like me than anything I ever tell them I want them to be. And they're going to grow up to be more like me than anything they want to be, unless they learn some of these tools. So if I see behaviors coming out of my children that I don't like, the very best, most highly efficient use of my energy is to turn my focus into myself and make sure that I am thinking, acting, and behaving, feeling and behaving in a way that I want them to be as a person.
Sure.
If 80% of what they learn from me is going to come by watching me, and I see them hit their sister or brother out of rage, and I want to then model how I'm irritated that they hit their sister or brother, how I respond from a place of an interaction that would normally create anger for me is how they're going to learn to respond when they're angry. So if I turn the focus inside and I spend my energy trying to become more of the kind of person I want them to be, that's the most highly efficient use of my energy and time.
Makes a lot of sense.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, and let's ask Jeannie if there's anything in the chat room or anybody else with a hand up. Or if Michael's back. Or if Jeannie has her mute button on.
I did have my mute button on. nobody else has their hand up, and no, Michael's not back on there yet either. Michelle was just talking. Oh, wait, a hand just went up. It's another 417 number.
This Hi, this is Magda calling, and I need some help from both of you to put together a good mind shifter for a friend of mine. I'll be doing a telephone consultation tonight with her, and it started out being an issue around her terror about not knowing where her next paycheck would come from. She's a consultant, so she doesn't have a regular paycheck. And then she shared some information through emails about how she connects this up with her terror of not being fed when she was young. She goes back to around the 9 months of age, this is what she believes, that she was not fed when she cried for food. And so she believes that she shut down and went deep into her psyche and didn't really want to come back into life, is how she said it. So she has trust issues with life supporting her. And she also mentions trusting life versus fear of life. So I put together what I thought would be a good mind shifter for her to do a brain dump on these issues, and then to introduce her to the forgiveness worksheet. And this is the mind shifter I came up with, and I'd like help with tweaking or changing or replacing, if you're willing. Here it is. It is safe and healing for me to trust that life supports me, and I love it when I don't know where my next sustenance will come from. What do you think? Are you both on mute?
No, I'm just pausing to think for a moment. While that is certainly, you know, a valid and perhaps an excellent mind shifter, especially because you're getting it and you're working with her. You know, so the energy exchange between you and her is going to be very important. And so I would not suggest anything I'm about to say as a replacement for that.
Okay.
So please hear, that sounds like you've picked up some of the themes, and it will be something that will resonate a lot for her. As I listened to the way you described it, and again, that's your energy, not hers, but as I listened to the way you described it, I might have a mind shifter that says, it's safe and healing for me to stay fully connected and engaged to life at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Because you talked about her pulling away and shutting down. And I would add that as a second or as a different mind shifter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just to pick up that other theme.
Okay. Well, I want to read that back, make sure I have it. It is safe and healing for me to stay fully connected to life at all times.
Correct.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you. And Jeannie, do you have any input?
No, it sounds like you're really right on with that. And Chanel?
I lost you.
It's a little noisy on this end because I'm in a cafe. But no, I think that his response was awesome on that, and it sounds like you're pretty much on.
Okay, great. Perhaps for listeners who aren't familiar with the mind shifter, perhaps one of you would like to explain how that's done and what we're talking about.
Okay, do you want to do that, Jeannie, or you want to let me do it because you're noisy?
Yeah, if you'll go ahead because it is noisy here.
Okay, so the mind shifter, I talk about the mind shifter, and the code word I have for it is targeted journaling. That helps some people understand it more. And the concept is that what's in my unconscious mind is stuff that I have hidden, actively hidden from myself with my own conclusions that it's too much, too painful, too scary, etc. And since we are an energy system and we work on the law of resonance, I can only hide those energies for a certain period of time before I have to put more energy into hiding them. And the mind shifter is a tool that lets me keep adding energy to unconscious material that I've hidden from myself until it gets so much energy added to it that it bursts through into my conscious awareness. And the process for doing that is to take an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and draw a vertical line down the center, and on the left-hand side, write a statement like the one Magda just gave us, or the one that came to me. And so on the left-hand side of the sheet of paper, the person might write, it's safe and healing for me to stay connected to life, fully connected to life at all times. And then create a space of an hour minimum. Michael's taken to recommending a two-hour block of time where the cell phone's turned off and the door is going to be answered by somebody else and the kids are taken care of. And I let myself write the mind shifter on the left-hand side of the page and then just let a free flow of whatever comes into my mind, and I write it down on the right-hand side of the page. And I write, it's not really safe for me to stay connected. Or I write, that would be great. My life would be so much better if I could stay fully connected and aware in each moment. And then I'd be better able to have loving relationships, and I'd probably make more money because I'd do better at my job. And then I run out of things to write. My mind goes a little blank, and I write again on the left-hand side of the page, it's safe and healing for me to stay fully connected to life at all times. And then I just start writing on the right-hand side, and I say, yeah, not only that, but I'd probably get a new car, and it'd be the one that I really wanted, and people would like me better, and I'd probably get more handsome, and I just keep writing. I draw a blank, and I write again on the left-hand side. And I keep doing that until I add enough energy to the negative material that it spills out. So I looked at the clock and realized we're pretty much out of time.